Welcome back to Feminism Now, a podcast featuring leaders and activists who are on the front lines of the fight for constitutional equality, economic justice, and reproductive rights. I'm Christian F. Nunez, the national president of the National Organization for Women. The theme of season two is Women Leading Democracy. And so it's obvious that we would want to speak with women leaders who have done just that, led our democracy. And what better person to speak with than the first woman elected U.S. House Speaker and the first woman to lead a major political party in Congress? Many people might have grown up feeling like life in the United States was solid, predictable. Many of us, white women, people of color, the LGBTQIA community, and many other marginalized groups, knew we didn't have all the rights and all the choices that we deserved. But we knew one thing. We knew we lived in a democracy that if we put up and voted for candidates who would stand up for us, we would in time see a better world. Lately, that doesn't feel true. Democracy has begun to feel shaky and frail. That's why I am especially excited and pleased to be here with you today and help us welcome Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi. She has made amazing history in 2007 when she was elected the first Speaker of the House of Representatives and one of the chief architects behind the Affordable Care Act. You know, you all know who she is. She has done amazing things in Congress. She has also helped pass the Ledbetter Fair Act of 2009. She's an advocate for child poverty. She's worked on prohibiting sex-based wage discrimination. She's helped be insurmountable changes for us in this Congress, in our country. Please help me welcome Madam Speaker Pelosi to Feminism Now. Thank you for being here, Madam.
Thank you so much, Christian. You said you were excited for this podcast. Well, I'm excited too. You know why? Now endorsed me when I ran the first time. And not every woman's group did. They endorsed some men, if you can imagine that. But in any event, Now has been there from the start, not only politically endorser, but an inspiration, an intellectual resource, a mobilizing resource, and the rest. So I'm always, always faithful and loyal to Now. And I'm so proud of you as the youngest leader of Now, as well as the second African-American. So important right now to have your youth, your diversity, and the rest at the head of this very, very important organization.
Well, I thank you so much for that. And just want you to know, Now is still with you, and we will still be there to support you in any way we can. But I want us to get in this conversation. I tell everyone right at the beginning, I'm a truth teller, and I know you are a truth teller. And that's why I'm so excited to have you on this podcast. We have been really watching so much go on in our world, in our country. And we can say that so much has been happening where people are really feeling like democracy itself is more frail than ever before. Do you agree with the sentiment? And what do you feel? And if you do agree with it, what do you feel is contributing to the frailty of our democracy right now?
Well, I think you're right. There is a frailty to our democracy. It is always something that we have to be vigilant about, but really points out the real necessity for feminism now. Because my hopes are riding on women playing a more leading role. Women, young people, people of color, the diversity. And that is what has contributed to some of the insecurity on the part of other people. They are afraid of globalization. They're afraid of innovation. They're afraid of immigration. They're afraid of LGBTQ. Women playing a more leading role of diversity is threatening their, shall we say, preeminence. It's sort of a white man kind of insecurity, if I just may. And that has been an opportunity for people like, what's his name, who used to be president of the United States. I hesitate to use his name, DT. And he has preyed on that. He didn't create it, but he normalized it. And he generated that insecurity among people. And that has been a dividing force in our country. So we have to, as I say, our diversity is our strength. Our unity is our power. And we have to work together to protect our democracy. I think one path to unifying is to have a strong economy that includes everyone. And that's what President Biden has been about with, whether it was our rescue package, our infrastructure package, our CHIPS package, our PAC package for veterans, our IRA to lower the cost of prescription drugs, but to involve young people and how we save the planet, new young people, and all of it with justice in the infrastructure package, billions of dollars to go specifically for environmental and infrastructure drugs. Same thing with some of the other bills, including IRA, called the Inflation Reduction Act, but about justice. So the way we will make our democracy stronger is to make our democracy stronger. In other words, to reduce the role of big, dark money in politics, to elevate the grassroots involvement in it, to stop partisan redistricting, to, again, pass the Voting Rights Act. And John Lewis's bill, Voting Rights Act is named for John Lewis, but the bill to stop voter suppression and the rest is one that he wrote the first 300 pages of. So again, how we make our democratic system more, shall we say, true to the aspirations of the people so that they know that their vote counts, that their voice is important, and it's just not big, dark money calling the shots. That's why we have to win the election with enough votes in the Senate to overturn the filibuster rule so that we can pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act as well as the For the People Act.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I want to go back to a couple of things that you mentioned at the very beginning is what you said, because that really summed up a lot for us. You said that what we're seeing and part of the reason why our democracy is seen as frail is because white patriarchy, right? There's some misogyny. There is some fear of inclusion. They're afraid of this progression. They're afraid of the power of the diversity and difference of everyone and what the capabilities we have seen happen from people shifting. And what we need ultimately is that equality and that justice to happen, but that can't happen without equity. But we have seen, and since Biden-Harris administration, they have really been investing in equity in so many of the different packages. And you all have been really investing in equity in so many of different acts that you've been doing, which is what I feel is very different from a long time I've seen. It's just really investing in equity and truly understanding that you cannot have equality without equity. Would you agree that that's been a big part of the investment?
Yes, absolutely. And again, as you're speaking, I'm thinking of what we need to do. We talked about what we have done, but there's some things that have not been done. And for us to have that equity, whether it's just environmental justice, social justice, economic justice, gender justice, gender equality, just whatever it is, we have to pass specific legislation to enable. For example, maternity mortality, which affects the African American community very directly. We have a whole slew of legislation put forth by many of our African-American members, but really embraced by our entire caucus. Alma Adams of North Carolina has taken the lead on this. This is an identifiable problem in our society, and there are answers to it. And there's resistance to passing, and that's why we want to build the outside mobilization for these things. It's there because people know. The other thing is these things have to happen. For women, we have to have affordable childcare. We have to have family and medical leave. We have to have home health care. So it's not just about children and that, it's about a sibling, a parent, or something, so that women can be in the workplace present without worrying about, oh my gosh, we always worry about our family, but not worrying that a child is in danger or a family member is going to fall down because nobody is there. And as we have that home health care, we have to. And the childcare, we have to invest in it. We have to have the resources, the good pay, good training, good safety for it all. And that, in my view, unleashes the power of women in a stronger way in the workforce to be there, to take leadership roles, to take a command of a lot of it. Because some of this is cultural. Then there's the three G's, gays, guns, God, and that's what they call abortion, you know, God. And for them, it's God, right? They don't feed the children once they're born, but they call that God. So we have that big those big challenges. And quite frankly, in my view, they're exploiting the religious issue on the board. I mean, I'm a devout practicing Catholic, all the rest of that. But give me a break, you know, with these bills and in vitro fertilization, when we're talking about that, when we're talking about a woman's right to choose and the rest of that. God gave us a free will to honor our responsibilities. It's not up to any politician to do that. So again, these things that relate to women's freedom and women's liberation to be able to be in the workforce. And I do believe that it is an answer. You know, when I was very young, there was something that people talked about, women's intuition, a mother's intuition. You have to act. You have to act. You can't think about it. You have to act. And that is what leaders need to be doing, is acting instead of letting other people diminish the initiative because you're thinking about it. And women know. I mean, we're multitaskers and all the rest. We know we have the courage, the confidence to act.
And I think going off of that, the women do know. So it's really important that we are asking women what they need that's going to give them a full, sustainable life, right? It's not leaving them out of the conversation. It's not leaving them out of the process of developing this legislation, these policies. It's making sure that you're going to those communities that are directly impacted and making sure that their voice and their narrative and their experience is really heard. So there is no disconnect, right? So there is no disconnect.
That's central to it. Is don't let me, and that's up to anybody to tell anybody what they need. We have to hear from people. And that applies to almost everything. When we're talking infrastructure, to go to the community, what do you want? In the past, they built freeways to divide communities. We want to break that down to unite communities. But let's listen to the community. And in our community in San Francisco, we are very, shall we say, proud of almost everything. I went to Baby Hunter's Point the other day, about the Baby Hunters Point Center, which is relatively new. And the community had say in every aspect of it. When we do housing, when we do transportation, we do every aspect of same thing on things that relate to childcare, healthcare, women's right to choose and the rest of that. Listening to women about not just what will happen, but the terminology that will be used.
Yes.
That
yes.
is respectful.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you also naming that because terminology matters. My background is social work. So I'm big on like starting where the people are at and using that terminology to make sure we are connecting with people and we're speaking in language and words that are meaningful and powerful for those people and empowering for those people. So I really appreciate you, Madam Speaker, naming that about that language. I think that's so extremely important. I wanted to kind of just go a little bit more into this and ask you a little bit more about when we're talking about what we're seeing, especially for the women and our rights of being overturned and the state of democracy. How do you feel women are going to contribute to helping? I want to put it past saving democracy, but saving democracy, but also rebuilding democracy to the democracy that we truly envision.
That is absolutely has to be the goal. To leapfrog, it's not about incrementalism or returning to something. It's about how we go forward. And I have always believed, I'm a former chair of the California Democratic Party, where you know, it's the biggest party in the country and the rest. And my experience there was always, you have to make democracy more democratic. You have us to make the Democratic Party more democratic. And one example that I will use is healthcare. I hate to use his name. It's like a curse word to me.
Oh, I know. I hear you.
He said, Obamacare sucks. That's his language. So he knows what he's saying. That has a market. And we're saying, no, it doesn't suck. It cures. But when we did the Affordable Care Act and when we saved the Affordable Care Act, people said, how did you do it? I said, well, we had, you know, there are a lot of reasons how we did it, but we could not have done it without the outside mobilization. And the outside mobilization to pass it and to save it was dependent on a lot about the terminology. We had 10,000 events to save it from his repeal and replace. 10,000 where people told their stories, not our provisions, their stories. And they told us that if we wanted them to be calling Congress about that, we had to frame it in their terms, not, oh, this is what it is, you know, it was in their terms and in their priorities. And that was a beautiful thing. So again, whether we're policy making or doing politics, it's important to listen, learn, and go forward in that positive way. Because there is skepticism, there is suspicion, there is just concern about whether people's vote really counts and matters and makes a difference. That's why we must, absolutely must, reduce the role of big dark money in politics, because it has such a big role to play. But again, we have to encourage the grassroots. Well, it is who we are. We are a grassroots party. And sometimes that looks, should we say, I don't want to say messy, but not as organized as some people like to have their lives be. But that's a Democratic Party. The vitality of it all is what we welcome. And again, women, young people, people of color, the diversity is the beauty of it all. I say the beauty is in the mix. The beauty is in the mix. So if you want the democracy to be more democratic, actually, you know what makes America even more American is the vitality of newcomers to our country. They come with their courage. They come with their optimism, their hope, their determination to make the future better for their families. In some cases, they bring their faith, their commitment to family and the future. Those are American values, and they make America more American. So again, the history of our country has been of reinvigoration, and we must welcome that and understand that it is that invigoration that is so important to our country.
We have so many more questions to ask, but right now we're going to pause for a short break for our new segment, Action Now. For this Action Now, I'd like to talk about voting. Voting is the foundation of our democracy, and protection of our access to the ballot remains as critical as ever. Over the past 5 years, voter suppression has manifested itself in racial and partisan gerrymandering and voter suppression laws that disenfranchise many voters. Now it's dedicated to providing women equal access to the ballot and electing feminist candidates to office. So today, we're asking you to take action, register to vote yourself, and educate your family and friends about issues on the ballot. Together, we can take action now. And now, back to our interview. So one of the things you just mentioned, I think is important for us to expand on, is about the vote. And it's the vote is part of democracy, but it's not just only part. And a lot of times we hear people, like, especially I think right now, sometimes we hear younger voters feeling like they're disenfranchised they're not feeling connected. They don't feel like as engaged to vote. Sometimes we feel people from some communities feel as, why do they need to vote? Because, you know, the one speaking to them or speaking for them. But I think it's bigger than that. And I think part of where I think as a general, we all have to do better is instead of just telling people just to go vote, we have to tell them why that vote is important and why their voice matters, you know, a little bit more, and give them examples of how their voice matters. Instead of just saying, just go vote, we have to maybe educate and tell them exactly more tangible reasons about why their voice matters and examples in their communities about how they can use their voice to make an impact. So I would ask for you, besides just telling a person just to go vote, what can we give examples for people and voters to let them know areas of why it's important they're voting because of some of the restrictions we're seeing happening, and why it's important that they get out and exercise their voice in this upcoming election?
You have put the challenge forth with great clarity. Let me just give you some examples of listening to the voters. After one of the elections recently, the 16 election, which was a disaster for democracy, for women's rights, for everything, horrible. when what's-his-name was elected, some of the young African-American, young, may I say, some college age, some like senior in high school, some 1 year out, you know, just in that 18 to 23, 24-year-old, they said, we want to meet with you to tell you what we think. They said, just because you send a sports figure or a Hollywood star to say, vote, it doesn't mean anything to us unless they're talking to us about our needs. And they found that almost condescending. And I said, well, you know, they're not there to condescend to you. They're there to attract your attention and then hopefully have an exchange. So I think it's really important when we're talking to people, it's about their needs, not about our vision necessarily, unless it's capturing their needs, these young people. And they said, you know, in this election, the one thing we heard is the candidate deserves it. It's not about what you have done. It's about what you're going to do. And what you have done may be qualify you to speak with some authority about what you're going to do. But elections are always about the future. So I tell this story about these young people saying, yeah, it's nice to have a star talk to us, but we want them to talk to us about what we need to see in the election, not necessarily while they are supporting that person. And it's about the future. And I say this all the time. It's not about anybody deserving anything. It's about what's coming next. Now, we like to talk about what we've done to prove that we share values and can get something done. But that is a springboard. It's not a base. It's not the reason they should vote for us. It's what comes next. And what comes next has to be listened to so that we're really focusing on what, how they see the future, A, and B, in their terminology.
Absolutely. It's about that legacy, right? It's about that legacy.
It is. And they are the future. The future belongs to the young people. They have to take responsibility for it, too. You know, and it's not just, what are you doing? It's how they grasp, take responsibility for it. Many of them care about their individual liberties. They care about jobs and economic opportunity. They care about the planet that they live in. They care, again, the respect for the dignity and worth of every person they are. And they, again, they have to know it's all there for the taking. For the taking. And they, as I always say to them, there's nobody in the history of the world like you. You are so special. Know your power and use it as you join with others around ideas for the future. Be yourself. Know your why you want to, what you want to see in all this, why. Know what you're talking about. Join with friends. Embrace the future.
Well, I think I was going to ask you what your call to action was. But do you have any other call to action? Because I think that really sums it up for us, really, truly, is be yourself, know who you are, embrace the future, and get out there and do the work. Would you have any other call to action that you would like our listeners to know or to act on that you feel will be very important for us as we move forward in embracing this to help us all be a part of this relationship we need to build the democracy that we are looking for?
It's important for everyone to understand that elections have ramifications. It's a very big difference between Democrats and Republicans at this time. I wish it weren't so drastic, but it's very drastic. And then you hear them talking about life begins at conception or something like that. And it's like, what, 125 members of the House are co-sponsors of that. Doesn't mean it doesn't even have more than that. 8 members of the Republican Party voted for women to have access to contraception. 8. That means 195 of them voted against women having access to contraception. So we're talking about a big difference in your personal life. Disrespect for your ability to make your own decisions in this regard. And those very same people, in many cases, don't want to feed children. They say they don't believe in what they call welfare. But no, it's feeding children. Imagine there are governors in the state which will not accept the free package of food that is part of our legislation because they don't believe in welfare to feed children. So I say this because I don't want to be a fearmonger, but I think it's really important for know that elections have ramifications. So again, know your power in terms of engaging in the elections, but not just as a foot soldier, but as a person who is helping to establish the priorities. There are a lot of challenges. What are the priorities? So know your power in prioritizing, know your power in building support, and know your power in winning elections, and then having the impact of your responsibility for that success recognized by people. Again, Lincoln said public sentiment is everything. With it, you can do almost anything. Without it, practically nothing. Also, I say nothing is more eloquent to a member of Congress than the voice of his or her own constituents. So weigh in. And if they are not with you, then maybe they need to be replaced. Maybe they need to replace. So anyway, call to action is know your power in terms of policy. Know your power in terms of politics. And elections are very important. And winning them is not just important from a political standpoint, but from a policy standpoint and from a personal standpoint. Again, with health care, access to quality, affordable health care, recognizing diversity among our communities in terms of how people are impacted. Weigh in. And again, I'm very proud that in the House Democratic Caucus, 70% of our caucus are women, people of color, LGBTQ. This is a remarkable thing. You know, they say Congress doesn't have enough. We do in the House Democratic Caucus. And you know what? We want more. And that's as we reach out for that, I'm saying to people, have the courage to run yourself because you are very special and will make a very big difference.
Speaker Marietas, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your continued leadership and your support for American women and support for this country. Listeners, please make sure you're out there voting, weighing in, knowing the policy, knowing the politics.
Christian, thank you for your tremendous leadership. We're so proud of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, listeners, for being with us as we use season 2 of our podcast to showcase people making a real difference to women and their allies in democracy. Stay tuned for our next episodes as we cover the issues that affect women most: child care and voting rights, reproductive justice and gun violence, the rise of Generation Z, and the need for health care for all, from affordable prescriptions to gender-affirming care. This podcast, Feminism Now, is a production of the National Organization for Women and Vox Topica. I'm Christian F. Nunez, NOW's national president. And if you like what you hear, please go to NOW.org, read up on our core issues and our approach to advancing women's equality, and get involved. We'd love to hear from you. Send your thoughts to feminismnow@NOW.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Topica.